Sweet. And welcome everyone to another very special episode of Podcasting Them Softly. This is Nick, and of course I'm joined by Frank. What's going on, bud?
Hello.
Pretty pumped for tonight. I'm assuming that you are too. Joining us for a discussion is production designer Chad Keith. Chad's newest film, Loving, from writer-director Jeff Nichols, hits theaters this weekend in limited release, with more cities being added each week to its rollout. Some of Chad's other superb credits include this year's absolutely incredible Midnight Special, Kimiko, the Treasure Hunter, Take Shelter, Begin Again, At Any Price, Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, and Goodbye Solo. In addition to those features and many others, Chad has worked on various short films, including Plastic Bag, from executive producer Werner Herzog and director Ramin Barani. Everyone head over to YouTube and check that out if you haven't. It's extremely cool, very thought-provoking, rather remarkable. So this is a real treat to have Chad with us for a chat. So without any further delay, welcome to the show, Chad. It's an honor to have this chance to talk with you.
Yeah, good to talk to you guys. How's it going?
Good, man. Yeah, thank you so very much for speaking with us. This is really exciting. I guess I just want to start out by asking you, I guess I'm not sure what the shooting schedule or production schedule is like for Midnight Special and Loving, but they're both coming out this year. And how close were those two films production-wise?
Yeah, with Midnight Special, we were in New Orleans for the most part. And we shot, you know, at the end of 2014, basically, leading into 2015. And, you know, Warner Brothers kept, you know, shuffling around the release date. So it was sitting there for a minute to wait for it to come out. And it was, yeah, it pretty much, you know, when we started talking about Loving, getting ready to make it, like, that's when Midnight Special was out. So, you know, Midnight Special was a little behind making that for sure.
What's it like to have two films coming out so close together like this? I guess the two films that have really big buzz.
Of course, it's Loving. Exciting. No, it's definitely been a cool year for, you know, and both being involved with Jeff. I mean, they're completely different films, you know. I would say at the end of each spectrum, they're just completely different stories. But yeah, no, it's been an exciting year. I've been supporting both of them, and still a lot of loving press coming up that I'm gonna do. That it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, you know, we're gonna certainly get into Midnight Special, but given that Loving is coming out this weekend, and you know, already the buzz is very hot, and people are talking about awards, and regardless of all that, you know, you seem to be Jeff Nichols's favored production designer at the moment. You've worked with him on his last few movies. What was it like getting a chance to recreate the time period in Loving, and you know, tell us a little bit about the film?
Yeah, it was great. You know, he actually gave me the script for Loving to read during our holiday break, and he said, "Here, check this out and see what you think. You know, see if we can do it." And I read it, and you know, didn't really want him to tell me anything about it. So I like sat down over the Christmas break while we were on Midnight Special, and was kind of like, "Wow, period film, you know, Supreme Court case." It was just like, you know, it was crazy to see like this come out of him, but also like it was just such an amazing script that, like, you know, I was just immediately like looking up stuff, researching like on my Christmas break while making Midnight Special about, you know, who this Loving couple was, and, you know, wanted to quickly find out as much as I could about it. So it was pretty exciting to read. And so we, you know, we jumped in last summer, and in Richmond, Virginia, where majority of the their story takes place, and started scouting and meeting people who were involved with their life and seeing where they lived and just starting embracing ourselves into their life. And, you know, we shot it last fall.
Now, when you originally got the script, did you just... I'm curious about this. Do you just read it as a screenplay, or while you're reading it, are you just starting to visualize things?
I try to read it at first just to see, you know, if I'm into it, and I'm reading the story and just seeing what it's about. But, you know, sometimes it's very hard to get distracted by, like, immediately knowing, you know, where the film is set. So, like, you know, then my mind starts racing about how to make things happen. So, you know, I try my best to, like, give it a good first read for the story. But yeah, you know, it's pretty easy to get sidetracked. Just like when I'm watching movies I've worked on, it's like I try my best to, you know, not be picky about seeing what I've done in the background. But
yeah, I'm fascinated in general by the role of the production designer, because obviously, you know, film is a, you know, visual medium first and foremost, and you know, you're responsible, obviously, in conjunction with the director of photography and many other people, of creating the, you know, the look of any given, you know, any given film, you know, regardless of the setting or the atmosphere. And in the movies that you've made with Jeff, each project's been so different and so unique. And I'm sort of curious to know, for you, considering that it was a period, now correct me if I'm wrong, it's the 50s, correct? That's when this takes place?
Yeah, late 50s, you know, leading into the 60s. Yeah, 50s.
So how, you know, in terms of doing your job, are you, you know, obsessed with getting everything, you know, period, authentic, right, for, you know, each shot, each individual moment? Or do you sort of look at it as a balance between, you know, artistic license and, you know, how something would have exactly looked back in the day?
Oh, man. I mean, it was my first sort of period film. So, you know, it was, I wanted to nail it, especially, like, you know, working with Jeff. He had never done anything period as well. And so just, you know, you put in the research work and just jump in and make sure every detail is, you know, taken care of. Like, and, you know, I have a good working relationship with my set decorator, Adam Willis, and we work together a lot. And so it was just, you know, a lot of conversations, just making sure we, like, nailed it. Lots and lots of research.
Do you have a starting point when you take on a new project? Because you'd mentioned this was your first period piece. Where do you even begin to be able to construct this?
Well, I mean, first of all, I have to like it, you know? I mean, like, if I'm going to spend, you know, a lot of time working on a film, I have to, like, really be into it. Like, you know, I read a lot of scripts and, you know, a lot of times I'm just, like, not into it because I want to like challenge myself and do something I haven't done before. So if I'm reading a lot of similar scripts, then sometimes I don't see it as a challenge to me. So, like, I'm always like, I love reading things that, you know, open me up to things I haven't done. But, yeah, I mean, just starting out, you know, just breaking the script down and, you know, having great conversations with the director and just start jumping in and digging into research and, you know, seeing if you're both on the same page about everything. And I just, you know, I really enjoy the scouting part of pre-production, just having, you know, a pretty strong opinion about getting the locations right, which is can be a big help for my job, or at sometimes be a hindrance if the location's not good. So, yeah, I mean, that's how I usually do, you know. I just do sort of a breakdown and then, you know, jump in with the director and try to see what they're thinking and just hit it wide open.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about Loving. how much of the film was the entire film shot on like locations and stuff? Do you favor location-based shooting versus, you know, inside of a studio or a soundstage?
Well, I mean, it depends on the story. I mean, it depends on what needs to be done. Like, you know, we were pretty lucky, you know, around the Richmond surrounding area, and we shot in a radius that was pretty spread out. So, you know, for Loving, with it being a period film, you know, it was pretty challenging to, you know, scout and find places that, you know, were standing, first of all, to be that old. And then, you know, there was just like such a struggle to find places sometimes when, you know, you have this old perfect house and then sitting across the street, like a whole entire new neighborhood has been built. So, you know, that you're like, oh man, can we buy this house and move it to a field? You know, it's just like, your mind just starts racing with ideas of how to make it work.
And you mentioned that the location scouting process is one of your favorite aspects of any working on any given film.
It is. I mean, just cause it can, I mean, it's helpful for me to, you know, just know like how much money we need to spend on certain locations as opposed to finding some locations that would cost more money if you had to change them up too much. But yeah, I mean, back to sort of doing like, you know, builds on stage, which, you know, we've done a lot for Midnight Special, did a lot of building for that. Like, I'm not opposed to that. It just depends on, you know, what works best for the production and, you know, exactly what's going on. But, you know, I'd much rather like be on a real authentic location and do any of the remodeling that you want instead of, you know, having a build. It's just good for everybody. It's good for the actors. It's good for just getting, you know, everybody into the same state of mind about being on like a real location. Like, there's something better about it that I like.
What do you think your biggest challenge was for the production of Loving?
Biggest challenge for Loving? I mean, it was just, yeah, wow. I mean, there were a lot of challenges for sure. Just, I mean, making sure that everything was period correct was the overall main challenge. But I don't know, just being able to, you know, capture who this couple were and to make it come across on screen, to just have it, you know, be the most realistic, you know, experience for the person that's going to watch the film possible, and to just entirely make their world, you know, realistic.
You know, and it might change from project to project. I'm not sure, but using Loving as an example, you know, I would assume that a majority of your work is done before filming ever begins. I'm curious to know how much involvement does a production designer have, you know, during the actual shoot versus getting everything ready for the, you know, the people to show up and then to take over those sets or those locations that you've dressed and, you know, set up.
Right. No, that's interesting. Especially in Loving, it became a thing where, you know, there were a lot of times where, you know, majority of the sets weren't started until, you know, during the shoot of the film. Like, you know, everything wasn't sitting there waiting for us. So in the beginning, during pre-production, it's amazing because, you know, the director's there, the DP's there, like everybody's there. Like, you can immediately just walk up to them and ask them. And so the first day of shooting, you know, everybody's gone. I'm kind of like left to control everybody showing up for the sets the rest of the movie. And but I go to set while we're shooting, and I open the set, make sure director's happy, everybody's happy, you know, jumping in on any problems that come up right before we shoot a set. But for the majority of the time, like, I'm constantly running around prepping the other sets and just constantly back and forth with the director as much as I can while they're shooting, which is, you know, sometimes kind of hard because they're on the set making the film. So it's just like, you know, Loving was one of the first times that, like, it was like my eyes sort of running the whole behind the scenes of what was to come, you know? So there was a lot on my shoulders, which I think went well. But it's, you know, it's just staying in communication while the filming's going and, you know, letting everybody know what's going on and making it happen.
When you go to build a production, is there at any point, do you ever, to yourself or maybe with the director or other collaborators, do you ever reference other films as to maybe what the look or feel should be? Or do you use still photography or another medium of art at all?
Yeah, a little bit of both. You know, it depends on the circumstance. There was, you know, with Loving, we were pretty fortunate because there's, you know, a documentary that was made that Nancy Bersky directed about the Lovings. That it's currently, like, on HBO again now. But
she's the lady that just did the Sidney Lumet documentary.
Right. Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So she made, you know, she made the documentary about the Lovings. And we just had so much invaluable information about them, and, like, so much footage and interviews and photos. The photos that, like, Gray Vallette had taken for Life magazine, you know, of the real couple that's played by Michael Shannon in the film. So we were just really lucky that there was just, like, these, you know, endless amounts of reference for us for the film, which was, you know, as you can imagine, extremely helpful. But yeah, I mean, also, you know, there's films we look at, and you know, when I was digging around trying to find some references of, say, like, some of the house interiors for Loving, it was kind of interesting that it was kind of tough. Like, I started to realize that there wasn't a lot of a lot that I wanted to go off of. I mean, there were period films, but, like, something, a lot of them I didn't really like. I would see things that would make me think that, like, that's how I don't want to do this film, you know? So, like,
sometimes probably just be just as helpful.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 'cause we had to do some kind of rundown, you know, sort of shack looking type houses. And, you know, I mean, one film that I could think of looking at was The Color Purple, you know, which is a great film. But it was just, there were some things that I liked about it, and then some things I didn't like about it. So it's just, you know, it's just what your preference is of how you want things to look. And I just kind of built off of that a little bit, because I stepped back and I was like, I'm not really finding what I like from references. So I'm just going to, you know, give it a shot and do my own thing.
Well, we obviously want to be mindful of our time, and we definitely want to cover a bunch of the movies on your list because you worked on some great stuff. I think I want to maybe transition to Midnight Special, which for me personally is easily one of my just most favorite movies of the year. When I saw it in March in the theater, I was moved, to be honest. I absolutely loved everything about it. And one of the main main things about the film that I loved was the visual style and how it looked, and sort of the vibe and the mood that it, you know, conjured for the audience. This film reminded me of so many great movies from the 80s when I was growing up. And I would have to imagine that, you know, your inspiration, some of, you know, Jeff's inspirations, yours, you know, Adam Stone, I believe he's a cinematographer. Yeah. I would have to imagine that there might've been certain films that would have influenced you, maybe some of the works of John Carpenter, maybe Joe Dante even. Because for me, Midnight Special feels like one of those movies that just slipped through the cracks, like, you know, something like The Explorers or, you know, half a dozen other films that, you know, didn't get the theatrical life that it deserved. And in this day and age of movies that are, you know, reboots and reimaginings and remakes and, you know, the fifth version of something that you've seen 1,000 times, a film like Midnight Special comes along and, you know, I just like, I want to tell everybody to see it because it's an original idea and it's wonderful and has a heart. Just, I don't even really know where to begin just because I love the movie so much. What was it like reading that script for the first time and seeing what, you know, Jeff had put together with it?
Reading Midnight Special was, I mean, it was pretty fun. It was just like, you know, wow. It was just, I mean, I think the script ended up being like 90 pages, you know, which is pretty short for a script overall.
It really is. And
it was just like every single word on the page, like, just jumped out and, like, you know, there was action to it. It was just like insane fun to read. There wasn't anything in the script that, like, just stopped moving constantly, you know? So I know it's going to be quite a fun one to do. And, but yeah, like some of our, you know, we were all over, you know, like Starman was huge. Lots of conversations about Starman and Prep, which is a great film.
Yeah. That's my personal favorite. I mean, I love John Carpenter. That's my personal favorite movie that he's made because if for no other reason, it's because of the heart of that movie and the soul of that movie. And I saw it when I was a kid and it hit me in a specific way. And throughout the years I've revisited it and I loved it. And that is one of the key films when I left Midnight Special saying, wow, they sort of recaptured some of that feeling of Starman and, you know, some of those movies of that ilk. So that's very cool to hear you say that.
Yeah, for sure, man. And, like, you know, I even pulled out, like, E.T. and watched it again. Just for sort of vibes of the house or whatever. You know, the film wasn't set in the 80s, but, you know, we wanted to sort of have it just have a fun vibe to it.
It has an Amblin quality to it.
Exactly, right. And Close Encounters, of course, also good.
And, you know, at the risk of spoiling it for people who haven't seen it, and I wouldn't want to do that. And unfortunately, I feel like there's a lot of people who didn't get a chance to see it. So I just don't want to spoil it. But it is so much more than what the trailer, which I enjoyed, but it is so much more than what the trailer might have conveyed to some people.
For sure.
I also think that the title is for me, it's pleasingly cryptic, but I think that the title might have been something that just confounded people. I think that I think that when you hear the phrase Midnight Special, you think of something, you know, maybe funny or something. And this movie is definitely serious in it. And, you know, there's consequences to the actions. And when you were growing up and you referenced some of these movies, or not when you were growing up, but when you were reading the film, were you saying to yourself, wow, I might have a chance to touch on some of these movies from, you know, back in the day? Like, did that cross your mind when reading it, or did that come about more when you were, you know, having discussions?
I mean, that was some sort of more in a discussion thing. You know, those are some of my favorite films growing up as a kid. And you know, you never want to steal anybody else's idea, but you can totally, like, you know, build and grow upon it. So it was fun to me, like sort of just meshing it all together and, doing what I wanted.
Yeah, you mentioned you don't want to steal from somebody, but like you guys were saying, I mean, E.T., Starman, where do you see like the fine line between like homaging something and then like somebody accusing you of ripping something off, if that makes sense? I don't mean to make it sound so harsh. I'm not saying that's at all.
Right. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's like any sort of, like the Main House and Midnight Special, any sort of like, Spielberg typical house, I feel like, they're all the same. It's like they're cool. I don't know. I mean, like, I don't think it would be fun to just recreate something somebody's already done. So, you can get ideas from it and like things about it, but I don't know. That's part of what I do and part of what I like enjoy doing with Jeff is like we're making our own worlds, so let's make it our own way.
And again, at the risk of spoiling stuff for, about the film, there is a little bit of CGI stuff that goes on in the movie.
Right.
And I'm wondering, from a production design standpoint, when a shot is a fully composed CGI image, when you obviously, regardless of how clean and crisp it looks from an aesthetic point of view, you know that it's not there, that they've done this in a computer. What is your job? What is a production designer's job? How does it morph from being, on a tangible set to the interior of a computer? When you're not a computer, you might be a computer whiz, I don't know, but I'm just assuming that you're probably more a production designer first and a computer guy second. So, how does it change your job when you have to deal with, CGI shots?
Yeah, I mean it depends on the shot. Like if there's any foreground elements involved to me, or not that are involved, if anything's practical that works along with the CGI, sometimes I've had to deal with. But for Midnight Special I was, involved a lot with the sort of definitely the look we wanted to create the CGI with, by not giving anything away of what happens. But I yeah, big input in how what you see on the screen happens for sure. So, and it depends, also with the wherever the location is. We have to do, tons of like greens work usually to make it right for the CGI guys. And there's a lot of sort of techie things involved with setting it up from my point of view to get it to the point where they can actually shoot the plates for that shot.
And one of the things that, I noticed, the few times that I've watched the film is, yeah, there's definitely computer stuff that, had to be done, but there seemed to be a fair amount of practical effects work going on, which I always find refreshing, especially in this day and age where it can just become so easy to say, oh, we'll do it in post, we'll do it in the computer, it'll take, it'll be blah, 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 blah. That was a big thing for me that made Midnight Special so special was that it had an epic yet intimate feel in a way, and it didn't get lost in the potential, technical smorgasbord that seems to, run the day. Your credits have sort of pointed to more cerebral offerings, films that have a very distinct point of view. Are you interested in potentially ever working on like a massively budgeted, extravaganza where you're running around with like $150 million, that kind of thing?
I think I could be. I mean, like, So, I mean, Midnight Special was, you know, the biggest budget I've done to date. So, you know, we were able to do a lot of practical effects and builds and, you know, able to just see it happen, like, while we were shooting it, which was, you know, incredible. You know, like, I, you know, one of the main houses that we shot in that we found on location, like, I doubled the house and built it on stage. So, like, I recreated the house for a, you know, a real special effect that happens in the film. So that was, you know, just really exciting. So, you know, it does help to have more money because you can have, you know, more bells and whistles and the right people, enough of the right people to, you know, make it happen for you. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, working in a with a whole full functioning special effects shop is like, you know, walking down to a toy store every morning, just walking down and seeing what they're creating. I mean, those guys have fun jobs.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you. You mentioned like building part of the house as a set. How much fun is that to do? That sounds like that would be a ton of fun.
It is. It's cool. Just, you know, seeing it develop from paper to the ending, you know, it's just pretty fun to do. I mean, there's a cave scene in the film, not giving anything away really, but, you know, we built this entire cave on stage, which was, it was incredible. You know, it was a huge challenge, but, you know, we pulled it off and built this whole cave on stage because there's no caves in Louisiana. Very flat, very, very flat there.
I wanted to ask you about Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
Okay.
That film is fantastic, man. I absolutely love that film. I know Nick loves it too. Where did you start developing that film? Or I should say, how did that project come about? And then how did the development for you personally as the production designer go?
That, it was, you know, it was pretty quick setup. You know, I went up and, you know, started hanging out with the director, Sean. And we, like, one of the producers had a property in their family of sort of this, you know, huge old buildings and houses that were in the family that were sitting there. And they knew that, you know, they had full access to that. So, you know, right when I started the film, you know, that was kind of the first things I went to, obviously, and it was just kind of like stripping this place out and revamping it and just trying to fill out the space on how to make it feel like a cult, you know. So it was just, you know, things like when we were, you know, looking at the kitchen, and I was like, you know, this kitchen is too small for us to really film these scenes in, you know. I'm like, let's put it in the barn. You know, I'm like, let's open up the property and shoot all over the whole thing, you know. But that was a fun experience. You know, it was I had a great time working with Sean, and it was, you know, it was a pretty quick shoot, but it was super fun to work on.
And that's a creepy film that gives off a very just an offbeat sort of sketchy vibe and tone. And I would definitely say that a large part of that has to do with, you know, how it looks and, you know, the physical sense of where you are in that movie and where you could be, you know. It's a unique piece for sure.
Yeah. Jody Lee Lipes, the DP who shot that, you know, I think he's pretty incredible. Like, the lighting on that film was really great, and it kind of, you know, it worked really well with my sort of, like, you know, I didn't want to draw any attention to, like, sort of any of their sets in the cult, because it was just kind of like all just really weird and creepy. So I just wanted to kind of to be plain and not draw attention to itself. But yeah, great experience.
You are the third, if I'm not mistaken. Otherwise, I'll have to go back and change this. you're the third crew member from Kumiko the Treasure Hunter that we have had on our show. We've had the pleasure of speaking to Nathan Zellner, and we also spoke to Sean Porter. And this was a film that completely knocked me on my ass, and then I proceeded to browbeat Frank to see it, and then it knocked him on his ass. And it has the power to knock anybody on their ass because it's unbelievable. When you read the script for Kumiko, what was your initial response?
Like, wow, they're doing this. You know, I met the Zellners at like Sundance. I was watching a short film of theirs, and I went up to them, you know, after their party, after their screening, there was a little party. And, I was like, oh man, I want to work with you. I just said, I want to work with you guys. Like, your short was incredible.
Oh, the Bigfoot thing? So,
huh?
Sasquatch? Was that the yeah. birth journal?
The Sasquatch birth journal is one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my entire life.
Who are you guys?
Right?
I didn't know anything about them. And so, you know, I got sent the script, and like, I'm like, all right, just let me know when to show up. So it took a while. Like, they were, you know, it was from the first time I got it, you know, we probably didn't shoot it. It was like 3 or 4 years later because, you know, winter kept coming around because obviously it's, you know, winter environment, and it just wasn't worked out. So, you know, by the time it came back to me, I had almost was kind of like had forgotten about it, honestly, you know. And then they're like, hey, are you still around for this film? And I was like, yes, I'll come like the second you tell me to. And yeah, I mean, such an awesome experience working with those guys. They're great.
And such a distinctive piece for you to work on, because that movie is like multiple movies in one. You have an international flavor to the film, which would have afforded you any number of opportunities as a production designer to do different things in the space of one movie. And a huge, huge reason why that film is as successful as it is because of the aesthetics and how distinctive it is.
Right.
What was for you maybe the biggest challenge working on Kumiko? Or maybe your favorite part, favorite aspect?
Well, it was cold. It was a cold shoot. But it was also, so I have to say, it was like a shared credit, like me and another. There was a complete, like, sort of Japanese unit that did this, you know. So there was a designer that did the Japanese portion. And, you know, he didn't speak English. I don't speak Japanese. There was only sort of one thing that needed to carry over as a prop from shooting in Japan and then coming to Minneapolis. And so it was kind of fun, like, just us not even having discussed what we were doing, because since they were two different worlds that she was in, it was going to kind of be, you know, fun to see how it ended up. And, like, you know, when I first saw the film, it was just amazing because it, you know, it worked. It was just like, wow, you know, me and this other guy, like, we never talked, and we created, you know, both of these different worlds for the main character. It was really cool.
That's fascinating that you guys were able to construct two separate worlds within the same film. And it's simpatico with itself.
Yeah, it was cool. Wow. It was sort of like a You just said, I didn't know what that portion was going to be like, you know, until I saw it, you know. And I told them, I was like, I don't even want you guys to send me pictures. I just want to watch the film and see what the difference is, you know. So it's kind of fun.
You had a chance to work with the Irish filmmaker John Carney, who made Once and, you know, became an overnight, you know, sensation, an independent film. He came over to America and made, in my opinion, the wonderful and rather underrated Begin Again with Mark Ruffalo and Keira Knightley. What was it like working on that flick?
It was fun, you know. It was definitely like, you know, a film that I hadn't done before, sort of a, you know, romantic comedy of sorts.
A romantic comedy for sure, but it definitely has some fairly dark moments.
Yeah, I mean, what drew me to the project, you know, I guess, you know, sort of was the music that sort of led the story. And being able to show, like, you know, New York City is basically like a character of the film, which it sort of was, because they're recording, you know, this album all over the city. So to me, like, you know, New York City became like a big character in the film, which is, I guess, the case in a lot of New York films. But it was just, you know, fun to showcase all these like highlights of hot spots in New York City. And shoot, I had a good time on that film. It was fun. Yeah, it was sort of the first film of that sort of level that I had done in the city. So not knowing really what that was like, you know, I felt like I had an overall good experience.
Yeah, I mean, New York movies that are shot on location in New York, that always offers up all the creative parties the chance to do some fun things. And New York is obviously so iconic and so photogenic. And what I found interesting about that movie is that, you know, an Irishman made a very, very New York feeling movie. And, you know, right. That I don't know how much that, you know, how that has to do with, you know, that obviously has something to do with your involvement and everybody else's involvement. But it felt very much organic to the city in the same way that Once felt organic to Ireland. Had you seen Once, Rick? Were you a big fan of it before the Begin Again came about?
I was, yeah, for sure. I saw that at, like, you know, Sundance when it first was there, and, you know, thought it was pretty special. I think it's cool to tell stories through music, for sure. I'd like to do more music films.
Do you have anything coming up that you can talk about?
I'm crossing my fingers that I'm going to still be doing Deborah Granick's new film, which I think is a really special script. And we were going to be going at this point, but, you know, now we're looking at the beginning of the year, and crossing my fingers that, you know, it's still going to come together. Because so far I've had, like, you know, pretty amazing conversations with her, and she seems like she's going to be a really strong director to work with.
And that obviously we'll be looking out for that. Would imagine that will be another interesting film from her, for sure. Before we do go, I want to ask you, before I even ask you that, I want to say a special thanks to a friend of Podcast Them Softly, Damian Leahy, filmmaker in his own right, the director of Heroes of Arvine Place. He put us together with Chad to get this you know, interview going. So thank you very much, Damian. But I did want to ask you, how did you get involved with Charlie Murphy, I Will Not Apologize? Because back in the day of the height of the idiocy with the Chappelle Show, Charlie Murphy made some rather colorful and memorable, you know, guest appearances on the Chappelle Show, which instantly vaulted him into my you know, my consciousness, and forever becoming a huge source of humor. Please tell me that Charlie Murphy is as funny in real life as he is when he's doing scripted stuff.
He is a really funny guy. That was a great job. It was with a local producer here in Wilmington that I've worked with before, and he kind of got this job at the last minute. He's like, "Do you want to go to Boston and do this, you know, Charlie Murphy live show?" And I was like, "Yes, I do." And so, you know, I went up there. I didn't know what we were doing necessarily at first, but I went early and basically, you know, set up his sort of, you know, stage for his live performance, which I had never done anything like that before. So it was pretty interesting to be involved with like a, you know, a live camera shoot. You know, after I had that done, you know, I think we did two tapings, and I just, you know, I sat backstage and watched them both and tried to just keep it together, because it was just an incredible, funny thing to be a part of.
Yeah, he's a very funny guy. I wish you'd see more of him and stuff. But we'll always have the Chappelle Show and his comedy specials. So. But yeah, thank you very much, Chad, for taking the time to speak with us. There's, you know, plenty more stuff on your resume we could have even gotten to. Frank and I, you know, big fans of Take Shelter. You know, for anybody who's looking for a great small little movie, one other film that you worked on, I just want to just shine a quick light on. People really should track down Goodbye Solo. It's one of the most humanistic, heartfelt movies that I've seen probably ever. And I just think that it's just one of those small gems that's waiting for people to discover. And when they see it, they're going to find something they're really going to like. I'm excited for you to have been a part of that movie. That's how much I like it. So thank you very much for coming to chat with us. It's very cool. And, you know, good luck with everything coming up. And obviously, Frank and I will be seeing Loving as soon as we can.
Yeah, good talking with you guys.
Yeah, thank you very much, man. This was great.
Yeah. Have a good one.
You too.
All right. Take it easy.
Bye.